WFSU-FM now presents a delayed broadcast of the March 8, 2013 luncheon meeting of the Capital Tiger Bay Club. This program was recorded at the Tallahassee Leon County Civic Center. And now here's Capital Tiger Bay Club President Laurie Walker.
I want to welcome you to this Friday in Tallahassee. Some of you may have been confused when you came into the Civic Center and saw all the dinosaurs. You might have thought, this must be the Economics Club. But it's not. It's Capital Tiger Bay. You're in the right place. And I wanted to quickly do a quick shout out to the Civic Center for those of you who missed the fried chicken. Can we say thank you for bringing back the fried chicken? Okay. Here in Tallahassee, we do have a busy weekend. It's that time of year when there are a lot of activities going on. We have the Jewish Food Festival, the Jazz for Justice, and of course, one of my favorites, the Red Hills Horse Trials, all happening this weekend. It's supposed to be a beautiful weekend. The Red Hills Horse Trials is known for attracting some of the best cross-country competitors in the world. It's a treacherous course. We had a major accident a few years ago on the course. In fact, last year's losing horse is actually featured on the buffet today. Yeah. I think they call it taco meat, but it's there. So you might want to check out the race. So let's see what's in the news. One word, sequester, sequester, sequester. That's a beautiful word, don't you think? I mean, it's terrible to ruin such a beautiful Latin word for such an ugly task. But what does sequester mean for Florida? After all, that's what we really count on. Here's a couple of things that y'all need to be aware of. The Coast Guard, which patrols billions and billions of miles of coastline that we have here in Florida, budget slashed. Now, instead of confiscating bales of marijuana and from drug-running cigar boats, the Coast Guard is going to be using that hashish to cook special brownies and will be holding very large bake sales. Of course, their customers are going to be very happy. Our manatee, our precious sea cow. We can no longer afford to protect this marine mammal. Instead, the Fish and Wildlife Commission has declared May through July as open season on manatees. In fact, the Department of Agriculture has some great recipes for grilled manatee on its website. Oh, come on, fresh from Florida. Thank you, Tim. Yes. And finally, third, Florida will lose one of our pro baseball teams. The good news is that nobody will really notice that. And the final impact. This weekend, with daylight savings time, we normally lose an hour. Guess what, on Sunday? With the sequester, we're going to lose 24 hours. Maybe more. I'm sure Mitt Romney is wishing we could probably roll back about, 2,880 hours. But be on the lookout for that on Sunday. If you lose a day, just blame it on the sequester. So who's following the search for a new pope? Anybody? Really? Seriously? Come on. There's a couple of Catholics out there. Thank you. The College of Cardinals is hoping to select the next pope before Easter. In fact, I heard on the radio on the way here that they start their sequester on Tuesday. Like many colleges these days, though, the College of Cardinals has its share of challenges. For one, have you seen their cheerleaders? I mean, ugliest uniforms in the conference. Come on. And what would a college be if it was not under NCAA investigation? Even the College of Cardinals is not exempt from the long arm of this sports police. The college is accused of recruiting new priests by prying them with extra bottles of Eucharistic wine and sending Catholic boosters to their homes with promises of Pope mobiles and kissable rings. But the most serious infraction? The college is accused of accepting a huge donation from one very powerful female broadcast personality and television channel owner whose goal is to become the first female pope. Her title? Oprah Winfrey. But don't you think it's time we had a female pope? Think about it. Come on. We have a female president of Capital Tiger Bay. Come on, ladies. Come on. Thank you. We have a female heading up Yahoo, who apparently doesn't want you to work from home anymore. It's time. After they allow women into the priesthood, the Vatican can then take a look at allowing priests to marry, and I don't mean each other. All right, anyone watching the Bible miniseries? Anyone? Okay. I know this is heavy on, like, religion today, but the Bible is on the History Channel. It's a 10-week series with the last installment on Easter. Quick spoiler alert, Jesus does die in the end, so. But I hear he rises again, so that's good. All right, now to our head table. We invited some Tiger Bay members who most likely will never get FaceTime with our guests today. So we're hoping that they take advantage of this now. It's our little gift to you, so. First, Casey Cook, who is a legislative advocate and a registered lobbyist with the Florida League of Cities, who apparently does not want any unfunded mandates, so you might want to write that down. I'm sure that's a new concept. Casey, thank you for joining us. Next to Casey is our Senator Bill Montford, a Democrat representing the 6th District, which does include Tallahassee. Moving over to this side of the table, we have Loranne Ausley, who is a former Democratic representative from the 9th District, which does include Tallahassee. Tallahassee's other representatives in the legislature, Democrat Alan Williams and Democrat Michelle Raywinkle-Vasalinda, could not be here today. And you wonder why Tallahassee has no sway in the legislature? Did you hear a common theme there? Okay. To my right is Tiger Bay Board Chairman Tim Center, who today is right of center on behalf of our speaker. Next to Loranne is Tiger Bay Board Member Allison Stacknick, an IT project manager for the Florida Department of Health, in an effort to work both sides of the aisle to ensure her agency is held harmless during the legislative session. Allison is neither a Republican or a Democrat. She follows the lead of Florida's number one people pleaser and considers herself to be a Christocrat. And next to Allison is Meredith Snowden, a lobbyist for the insurance industry with Kolodny Fast. She is probably the token member of the head table who will get the time of day from the speaker, from the Senate president. So now please join me in welcoming Tiger Bay Board Chairman Tim Center.
Thanks, Lori. Hey, it's good to be back. Good to be back. I missed you guys. Thanks. Don't get up. Senate President Don Gates, it is a pleasure to have you join us in this esteemed building and this esteemed place at this esteemed club, the opportunity for you to share with us your enlightened views of public policy and the future of Florida. It is not often that we get somebody from North Dakota to visit us in the basement of the Civic Center. Don Gates is from North Dakota, where the state tree is a telephone pole. There was recently a group of North Dakotans who were really pissed off at the president and Congress and decided to march on Washington. And the last that they were heard of, they were right outside Spokane. So I decided to. Don has his own Wikipedia page, which I don't know if he actually edits or not himself, but at least I stole a bunch of this. And it's nice to know that he is a really an amazing individual. As a young man, quite accomplished in high school and in college, he was a student body president, a national debate chairman. 22, he leaves college to become the editor of the local newspaper called The Republican. That's right, there's another newspaper out there just like ours that claims to be fair and balanced. And the big difference, though, is this. Big difference, because in Don's paper, they had articles, not just pictures. And it was a very impressive sort of thing. Speaking of pictures, have you been watching the 25 Women You Need to Know? You know, next year it's just going to become a centerfold. It's going to be awesome, and I'm looking for it. Before serving in the Florida legislature, President Gates was superintendent of schools in Okaloosa County. He was able to lead the county from a C rating to an A rating, much to your credit and to your efforts, and I think that's something to be commended for. It's also interesting to note that in the county where he comes from, in Okaloosa County, there have been a lot of kind of interesting things in the news as well. Elected officials have been driven out of town, put into prison, evaded taxes. He saw a university president fired and a House speaker shamed. But like any good Don, he was sure not to leave any fingerprints at all. Truth be told, Don, we have not seen a more political superintendent since Jackie Pons booted Rocky Hanna out of Leon. Too soon? Too soon? Senate President Gates is an accomplished man and one who probably needs no advice, like Will Weatherford got from Lucy Morgan. When Will was coming into his speakership, Lucy was kind enough to write Will a letter to advise him on what he should attempt to hold himself out as a leader of the House of Representatives. Don did not get such a letter. In fact, it was very clear recently when our undercover cameras were able to capture some of the antics that weren't available to the public. In fact, I'd like to, if I can, I mean, you're a Lutheran too. I mean, this is an amazing thing. You guys are very stoic, practical, but this hedonistic, well, if we can roll the tape. Well, it's so hedonistic, they weren't even able to keep the lights on during it. So we'll skip over that, which will immediately mean that the next four jokes don't work. Again, no fingerprints from the Senate president at all. Actually, I will close with this. If you were at the opening session, it was probably one of the neatest things to see in watching them go through the script. Don Gates is a good Republican, a very strong believer in family values. In fact, he's been a consistent participant in Take Your Child to Work Day with Representative Matt Gates, his son, who, when he recognized him for emotion, he said, "For what reason do you rise?" And he said, "To tell you I love you." Capital Tiger Bay loves you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Gates.
Well, I think I appreciate that. I'm not sure. And I do want to thank the people that we hired from the Nixon White House for taking care of that tape. When I came in, Tim actually took me aside. This is true, unlike the other things he said. Tim took me aside and said, "Now, you know, I know you've spoken to other Tiger Bay clubs around the state, but this is the most ribald club." Ribald, an extraordinary adjective to apply to a group of people, and one that we Lutherans are not familiar with. So I had to look it up. And we Lutherans are not ribald. We do tend to be stoic. As a matter of fact, I grew up in what was called the Norwegian Lutheran Church. And it's a church that was founded on the fear that somebody someplace was having a good time. And it was up to us to put a stop to it. But I'm glad to be here with ribald people. When she was talking about the dinosaurs, I thought that was going to lead into a bunch of snarky remarks about Republicans having a meeting here. But I'm glad that that didn't happen. And I appreciate Tim as well mentioning that in my background, I was a superintendent of schools. Now, don't be confused. I was not an educator. I was just a business guy in the community, an activist parent, and our school system was declining academically and financially. And so I appointed myself chairman of a committee to find somebody to run against the incumbent superintendent, and those who could win wouldn't run, those who would run couldn't win. So I wound up as the loser in my own contest, and I ran. But my daughter reminds me. She said, "Dad, you are not like Mr. Monford. You are not a real superintendent. You just played one on TV," and that's true. And I tell you this, Bill Monford is somebody I went to school on. When I became a superintendent of schools, I looked around and said, who's doing the best job in the state of Florida? Whether it is improving advanced placement or international baccalaureate, whether it's helping struggling students, what's the best story around the state? And when it came to international baccalaureate and advanced placement and helping broaden the base so that more students who might not have a lot of books at home, who might not have parents at home who went to college, students who otherwise wouldn't have been thought of to be in advanced placement or IB classes, but who had the intellectual potential, they just needed the extra help. The best leader in the southeastern United States was Bill Monford, and we went to school on him. And I'll tell you, he's a great guy. And I need his vote on a couple of bills. I appreciate, though, any reference to my short time. I guess I spent 6 years as superintendent of schools until the people in my community made a deal with me. They said, if you promise to leave town half the year, we promise to elect you to the Senate. And they kept their part of the bargain, and I kept mine, so here I am. But occasionally, people in the Okaloosa County School District remember that I had been the superintendent, and students remember that I had been their superintendent. In fact, I was speaking with a young lady today who today argued a case before the Florida Supreme Court and she, as a public defender, and she came by to say hello, and she remembered that I had been on the school board and had been the superintendent when she was in school. And so I'm always delighted when people remember that. And occasionally I get invited back to schools that I'd been superintendent of. In fact, that happened just recently. I was invited to Florosa Elementary School in South Okaloosa County on Career Day. And they thought it would be interesting, students who remembered me, to have me back and talk about my career as superintendent and my career as a senator. And so I spoke to a fifth grade class, and as Senator Monford knows, many of you know, when you speak to a group of elementary students, afterwards, the teacher will say, well, you know, for two extra credit points, write a letter to the guy or the woman who was here. So I get a lot of letters, faintly smelling of Jolly Ranchers and bubblegum. I brought one of them along today from Florosa Elementary School. And you can't make this stuff up. This is kids write letters that are just fantastic. This is from Jennifer. It says, "Dear Superintendent Gates, or Senator Gates, or whatever it is you are now, I love your job. When I grow up, I want to be just like you and be the senator of all the schools." She put it all together. 99% of me wants to be a senator. But 1% of my brain still wants to be a softball all-star. So my question is, exactly how much of your brain do you need to be a senator? Write back soon because softball season's about to start. Your friend, Jennifer. P.S. I will vote for you 1,000 times. But since she is not from Palm Beach County, that did not work. And just like Bill Monford and Loran and Bev Kilmer, who's here, and others who have served in public office, you know, when you see a young person do a good job, you want to lift them up. You want to encourage them. So in my county in Northwest Florida, if you can catch a pass in the end zone, you can get all the recognition in the world. But if you're a student who struggles and then succeeds academically, you know, you may not get much of a lift up. So I write letters every year. I sit down and write a personal letter to every student who has topped out the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test. Write them a note and let them know that I recognize that they've done well and want to encourage them. And so, you know, students are polite, so sometimes they write back. So I brought one of those letters from a student. This one is from Marcus, and he's from Edge Elementary School in the town I live in Niceville. Dear Senator Gates, when my mom told me I had a letter from you, I was eating at Po' Folks. I almost choked. I thought I was in trouble if I got a letter from you. My sister said she would give you her allowance to get me out of trouble. But I knew that would not work with you, Mr. Gates, because she only had a dollar. Then I read your letter, and I was so proud. Will you come to my school so I can prove to my friends that I know you? Believe me, Mr. Gates, I can get the money. Marcus. Now, they say we don't teach civics in elementary school. Here's two kids, fifth graders, who already understand the essentials of Florida politics. First, it's an open question if senators use all their brains. And secondly, if you want to get a politician's attention, you have to get the money, which leads us to ethics. I'm very pleased to report to you that this past week, in the first week of the legislative session, we accomplished something which, for some people, it was sort of a minor miracle. Some folks said it would never happen. The chattering class in Tallahassee predicted we would not get this bill through the Senate. We would not get it through the Senate unless it were watered down. But I'm pleased to tell you today that the Florida Senate, within just a few moments of coming into session, passed unanimously, with Senator Monford's strong support and co-sponsorship, the most sweeping public ethics bill in 38 years. Now, people ask me, why was passing an ethics bill your first priority as Senate president? Why was that so important? Well, Tim alluded to it when he introduced me. In my medium-sized Florida county, in Okaloosa County, we recently had a county commissioner suspended by the governor for ethical misconduct, a college president fired for ethical misconduct. We had a tax collector take $1 million of public money and give it out in bonuses to people who had been working in his barbecue and salvation business. We've had we had a tourist development director who committed suicide after stealing bed tax money, a Speaker of the House who was driven from office. Our sheriff is in federal prison. And that's just a medium-sized Florida county. And now we've got county commissioners embroiled in a TDC scandal, and we're not sure exactly where that would lead. That, and I wish I could say that Okaloosa County, my county, had a monopoly on rascality, but we don't. The fact is that either Bill or I could walk you through story after story, a seamy, steamy tour of Florida, where you could learn about politicians at the local level and at the state level. And frankly, Tallahassee has not been immune from this. The city of Tallahassee has not been immune. You know, you can see all kinds of stories of politicians having been accused or having been found guilty of violating the public trust, of using public office for private gain and not use it for the public good. And it seemed to me, and it seemed to Will Weatherford, who is my full partner in this effort, it seemed to us that that before we could ask you to trust us on economic development policy or healthcare policy or education policy, we had to ask you to trust us, period. And therefore, we had to raise the standard of ethical conduct by taking some decisive action. So here's what the bill that passed the Senate does. First, it is a tough conflict of interest provision. Now, when I talk to people back home in Northwest Florida about this, they say, you mean this wasn't already illegal? But it wasn't. Senators could vote on matters in which they had a conflict of interest, not declare the conflict ahead of time, still vote, and up to 15 days afterwards file a conflict form that somebody put in the bottom desk drawer in the Senate Secretary's office and nobody ever looked at. And so now what we have is we have a bill that's passed the Senate that says that if you are a member of a legislative body or you are a member of local government and you have a matter coming before you that affects your private gain or loss, first, you've got to announce the conflict publicly in advance, not afterwards, and secondly, if it inures to your own special private gain or loss, you can't vote on it and you can't affect public policy. We think that's important. Secondly, this bill provides that financial disclosures for public officials and politicians running for office should be easy for you to find. Now, if you're a member of the media, you know how to weave through all of the processes and find Bill's financial disclosure or Bev or Loran's when they were in the legislature or mine. But if you're a member of the public, if you're an ordinary Floridian, you have to go on a treasure hunt in order to find the financial disclosures of public officials. Will Weatherford and I think that you ought to know what we owe, who we owe, and what we own. And therefore, this bill, which passed the Senate unanimously, provides that financial disclosures are to be complete, understandable, verifiable, and online in advance, so with a click, you can find out exactly what the financial disclosures are of everybody running for public office. We think that's important, too. Let me mention something else that is generously called co-employment. What it means is that sometimes, occasionally, I know you'll be shocked, that somebody would be elected to the legislature having had absolutely no experience or credentials in, well, let's pick education. And suddenly they get in the legislature, they're an appropriator, maybe they get on the education committee. And then within a few days, maybe a few hours, maybe a few minutes, there's an epiphany. A dove comes from heaven and lights on their shoulder, and they're an education expert, and they get hired by some college or university or local school district for $50 or $80 or $100,000 a year for a consulting job, or what we in Northwest Florida call a walking around job, and they have no credentials to do it. And so what we've done through this piece of legislation is to slam the door on that kind of double dipping. Now, we want teachers to run for public office. We want firefighters and police officers to be in the county commissions and in the legislature. But it seems to me, go ahead and answer. That's so, tell them hello. But it seems to us, that's not what we're trying to prevent. It seems to us that the gross abuses that we've seen, that you've read about, that you know about, and that might occur in the future ought to be stopped and prevented. And so our bill does that. The bill also addresses an issue that troubles me personally, and that is seeing politicians living out of their committees of continuous existence. Now, the McCain-Feingold law was upheld by the Supreme Court. Political contributions are protected free speech. But when you collect contributions that are supposed to be used to advance political causes or political campaigns, and instead that money is diverted to subsidizing a politician's filet mignon lifestyle, Will Weatherford and I think that's unethical, and we're going to make it illegal. Yeah. Now, there's something else that may chip a few rice bowls, and if so, I apologize. And that is, we don't believe that politicians ought to trade on their offices and the influence they've gained in order to go into the lobbying business and, have an advantage. Now, you know, I'm president of the Senate, and arguably, I might have something to say about appropriations, at least based on the fact that 37 people lobbied me between the time I walked in the door and got my chicken. It would seem I might have something to do with appropriations. And so imagine a circumstance in which the day after I set the gavel down, I walked across Adams Street and set up Don Gates Government Consulting, after I've steered billions of dollars to government agencies, to places where, you know, agency heads are protecting their little grand duchies. Now, imagine if you, sir, did the same thing. You set up a consulting company across the street. My guess is I could probably get an appointment with the Secretary of the Department of Corrections or the Secretary of the Department of anything else a lot faster than you could. And it seems to me that that's wrong. And so, therefore, Will Weatherford and I want to nail shut the door that provides now an opportunity for politicians to go back and lobby the executive branch. We've already shut the door on the legislative branch, but to shut the door on politicians being able to go back and lobby the executive branch after they've left office. We think it's unethical, and we want to make it illegal. The Ethics Commission. The Ethics Commission can wag a finger. That's about all they can do. They can embarrass you. They make you feel real, real bad for about two news cycles. But the Ethics Commission has had all kinds of encumbrances placed in its way. This year, the state of Florida wrote off $800,000 in uncollected fines that politicians and people trusted with public office just decided not to pay. And many of those politicians are still in office with unpaid fines. Now, that's because under current law, there's a 4-year statute of limitations on ethics and elections law violations. And at the end of 4 years, functionally what happens is that the fines just get written off and they don't get collected. So in the bill that unanimously passed the Senate, we extended the statute of limitations to 20 years. We gave the Ethics Commission teeth, and we said that we don't believe that politicians ought to have a different door into the courthouse than typical citizens of the state of Florida, so we're going to garnish their public salaries and we're going to lien their private property, and by God, they're going to pay what they owe. Now, there are some who may say that that this bill won't pass the House of Representatives, that we got it through the Senate, and maybe that was because we had people like Bill Monford working so hard to try to get it passed. It was a bipartisan effort, not a Democrat effort, not a Republican effort. So many efforts in the past have been derailed, probably because the issue was held hostage to the advocate. And so there are some who say, well, you'll never get it through the House of Representatives. I don't believe that. Will Weatherford, the Speaker of the House, is as much a full partner in this effort to clean up public office and public ethics in this state, as much of a partner as I am. And I predict to you that the House of Representatives may add their own polish to the bill. They may sand off what they consider to be rough edges. But I believe that this bill is in very good hands, as we sent it over within minutes of passage. We sent it over to the House of Representatives and asked them to take it up. And I believe that they will do the right thing and that we will see that bill pass the House. It will go to the governor's desk and we will go back and redeem the 38-year-old promise that we would take the next step from government in the sunshine to government we could be proud of. There were all kinds of interesting comments made earlier about sequester. Let me make one more. I don't know if mine will be interesting, but it's a little bit of a downer. And that's this. Sequestration, you can debate whether or not it's going to have an $85 billion impact or whether they ought to have closed the White House to tours or, you know, all of that stuff. You can debate that. But here's what's not debatable. What's not debatable is that sequestration has created a sense of uncertainty and instability in sectors of the Florida economy. I come from a part of the state where, in my district, there are 5 military bases. That means that thousands of people who are my constituents are affected directly by the aerospace industry, the defense industry, and the supply chains that feed those industries. And that's the case in many places all over the state of Florida. And so here's the difficulty. I was at the Front Porch restaurant in Niceville, Florida, two Saturdays ago for my Saturday breakfast, and I stopped to see the proprietor. It's a very small restaurant, kind of a family thing. George runs the front, and his wife cooks in the back. I said, George, how's business? He said, lousy. Business is down. I said, why? He said, sequester. This was 2 weeks ago. I said, George, we don't have sequester yet. He said, no, you don't understand, Don. They're already furloughing people at the base, Eglin Air Force Base and Hurlburt Field, one day a week out of fear of the uncertainty related to sequester. So I've already had to lay somebody off and my business is already down. And now we're seeing that kind of fear and uncertainty spread in sectors across the economy. People I've talked to who are employers and employees in businesses around the state, not just defense-related industries, but industries that then relate in a secondary or tertiary way to those industries. Now, I'm not in Washington, and unlike perhaps some other Tallahassee politicians, I don't want to go to Washington. Don't send me there, please. I want to go home to Niceville. But I will tell you this. We now know what a leaderless government looks like. We now know, and at neither party can cover themselves in glory, and both parties cover themselves in shame for the fact that they can't pass a Mother's Day resolution up there without acting like the Hatfields and McCoys family picnic. They can't. So here's the imponderable. This weekend, I'm going to be hunched over budget assumptions. The governor has presented a budget. And that budget was based upon information that he had available to him in December. We now sit in March with a whole new set of facts. And the biggest of those facts is that we have no idea what the folks in Washington are going to do or when they're going to do it. And my fear, my greatest fear, is that they will kick the can down the road another 3 or 6 months and not come to some kind of a budget decision. If we did that in the Florida legislature, there'd be tar buckets boiling out back and chicken feathers in the air, and we deserve it. And so my hope is that this dysfunctional group that we call the President and the Congress will get their act together and make it possible for us to have an economic forecast that lets us take advantage of the slowly increasing and slightly positive outlook that we have in the Florida economy. That's my hope. Now, if we can do that, if we can seize an opportunity to have our economy continue to grow, have a budget that's built upon honest, solid, prudent assumptions about slow but steady continued growth, and if we can really keep the promise to have a more ethical and open government, then I think we'll have better jobs and better communities and better schools and a better Florida. Thank you.
Just a quick couple of statements before we open the floor for questions to Tiger Bay members. Are you allowed to accept our wonderful gift, Tervis Tumbler?
Lucy, what do you think?
Okay. Thank you. We appreciate your comments and your insight. And I wanted to personally thank you on behalf of Tallahassee for the Bill Proctor Relief Act of these ethics changes. Don't you think? And for those of you who are interested in seeing the video that we did not have a chance to show you today, it will be at the press kits on Tuesday night. So go out and support the Barbara Fry Scholarship Foundation on Tuesday, and I know that'll be fun for everybody as well. Yeah. Now we'd like to open the floor for questions by Tiger Bay members. I know we'll have some.
You probably didn't get the joke that Laurie just made about the Bill Proctor Relief Act. When you said you changed the statute of limitations from 4 years to 20, is that from this day forward, or is it retroactive?
Well, it turns out that James Madison, when he wrote the Constitution of the United States, thought that it would be a bad idea to pass laws today and make them retroactive. So there's something about no ex post facto laws. So the only laws we can make are laws from this date forward. We can't make illegal an act in the past that was legal. Otherwise, you know, I'd have a few selective ones. People have asked me about my view on abortion, and my view is if we could make it selectively retroactive, I'd be for it.
Don, I'm Milt Boggess, and I've run for state office in the past, and I'm just wondering, have you thought about running for governor yourself? It sounds like you have the right attitude. And is there any way you could possibly influence Washington to take some of the same ethical considerations that we've done here in Florida?
Well, the first part of your question about my running for governor is easy to answer, and that is that I have no aspirations to run for governor or any other office. I think that presiding officers who want to focus on presiding and working with their colleagues to do a good job tend to be more successful than those who are looking at the next election. So I'm worried about the next generation, not the next election. And the other thing about can we influence Washington? In my salad days, I actually worked as a low staff member in the United States Senate. And I noticed, they took me out one day and showed it to me, they keep a dumpster on Capitol Hill, and on the side of the dumpster there's a sign that says, input from the states. And they fill the dumpster all week, and then on the weekend, at night, when no one's looking, they dump it in the Potomac River. So I can tell you this, I've talked to Senator Nelson, I've talked to my Congressman Jeff Miller directly about our concerns about sequestration and the uncertainty and problems it creates for our economy and our budget, and they were polite and they heard me, but honestly, I think that the partisanship and the bitterness and the finger pointing and the rancor in Washington is so deep that for the first time in my life, and I've been involved in a lot of partisan fights, and I'm a partisan Republican, but for the first time in my life, I fear for the future of our political system, because I think the capability in Washington to reach across party lines and get something done has been lost. Bill Monfort and I work together. We don't always agree. I just asked Bill about a piece of legislation that he's been very involved in helping us improve as we were sitting here. But that kind of thing doesn't happen in Washington. It happened in Washington years ago when I worked there and I saw giants in the United States Senate work across the aisle. But I fear for the future of our political system. And frankly, I think that until we run a little bit of Sani flush through both parties, we're not going to be able to get resolution of the kind that we need. I'm disgusted with the leadership in both political parties in Washington, and I think it's time for a fundamental, serious change.
Senator, I want to, first of all, thank you for what you're doing on ethics reform. However, I would say, it says on the financial disclosures, there's a $10,000 fine, and this is a first-degree felony, if you falsify this disclosure. The problem is, if there's nobody out there to bring that person in and charge them with a felony or give them that $10,000 fine and back them up, we again have all these grandiose, wonderful, statutes that say don't do this, don't do this, and don't do this. Does your ethics policy, and I'm not sure who the felony would be, who's the person to impose the felony? I'm not sure it would be the Ethics Commission, but until somebody actually gets a felony or gets an offense or, you know, the fines were a joke, I think we have some good intentions, but we have no teeth behind it. So I'm just curious if you really have put someone else there to put some teeth behind it.
Well, thank you. That's a great question, and it lets me explain another feature of the bill. In the past, the Ethics Commission has only been able to act when somebody brought a complaint. And frankly, I've seen that be used for cynical purposes. You know, you find somebody who's running for office that you don't like, and so you file a complaint against them. They can't answer the complaint in public, and so the next mail piece, the next newspaper ad, the next TV ad is, Bill Monfort investigated by Ethics Commission. Well, being investigated because there's been a specious complaint filed against him. So what we've tried to do in this bill is to expand the ability of the Ethics Commission to actually take referrals not just from a person who files a complaint, but from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, so that if FDLE comes across something that they think violates the Code of Ethics, they can ask the Ethics Commission, they can refer the matter. The same thing with the Attorney General, the same thing with the Governor, and the same thing with state attorneys. So now we can create a kind of nexus between criminal investigations, if something is a criminal matter, and ethics investigations. So we think we've strengthened it in that regard. But the other thing is, again, the reason why the Ethics Commission, I think, hasn't had the teeth that it needed is because it couldn't enforce its rules. Politicians could thumb their noses. But when you garnish somebody's salary and you put a lien on their property, you kind of get their attention. So, yes, we've cross-referenced with criminal authorities, and at the same time, we've given the Ethics Commission the ability to do something that will really hurt those who violate the law. Now, my son is a lawyer, and he always says 97% of lawyers give the other 3% of us a bad name. I would just hasten to say, I don't know if that's true, I'm not a lawyer, but I would hasten to say there are a lot of people in public office who are in public office for the right reasons, and they do the right things, and they're the kind of people I'd be happy to leave my bank book, the keys to my car, and my children with. A lot of them in both parties. But those who take actions that would lead us to either criminal prosecution or ethics or elections violations need to be fined, they need to be prosecuted, and they need to be dealt with severely so that we can clean up the system. I think our bill does that. Yes, sir.
Question on state employees.
Can everyone hear, or do we need to improve on that mic?
I can talk louder.
Okay.
Relating to state employees, and I was a state employee for over 35 years. And when I began my career, the state of Florida was a good place to have a career. The legislature seemed concerned about state employees. They saw a value in having quality state employees. But over the last 10 or 15 years, it seems that when the legislature comes to town, their focus is what can we do to state employees this year? And rather than looking at state government as a vehicle to provide services to the citizens of and business state of Florida, and looking at how do we do this in the most economical, efficient, and effective manner? And then we got to outsource. Well, as an example,
is there a question?
In 2000,
our chair is asking if we could get to the question.
Okay, the question is there any consideration within the legislature to take a look at state government operations, state employees, comparing them to other governments, other industries, and how can we best deliver the services to the state of Florida?
Yeah, there is. The question, if you didn't hear it, was, is there any effort being made in the legislature to compare what our policies with respect to government operations to that of other states, what our policies are with respect to employees to that with respect to other states? Yes, absolutely there is. As a matter of fact, the effort, which I supported last year, that required state employees to contribute to their own retirement. Now Florida joins 46 other states, including states presided over by liberal Democratic governors and legislatures, in having employees contribute to their own retirement. So there just is a cross-referencing to what's being done in other states. Let me say this, though. Here's an example of where Bill Monfort is an extraordinarily effective senator, and where Democrats and Republicans are working together. This past summer, Bill contacted me about several issues, but one of the issues he contacted me about was this. He said, Don, if there is any opportunity, if the revenues are there, I want to make sure that after 6 years of a parched earth and no recognition and no raises, that our state employees get somehow taken care of in this budget. Don, I'm going to champion, Bill Monford said to me, I'm going to champion raises for state employees, and I want your help. And so Bill Monford and I are working together as partners to try to find the money to end the 6-year drought and give state employees a raise this year. And if it happens, and that'll require some concern about, what sort of assumptions you make about sequester and what effect that will have on our revenues, if it happens, it'll be your senator, Bill Monford, who made it happen. Not Republicans, but a Democratic senator named Bill Monford who got Republicans to do the right thing. Yes, sir.
Senator, is there any truth to the rumor?
There's no truth. She was my cousin.
There's a rumor going around that you will be supporting Bill Monford in his pursuit for the governor. The next time around.
Is that
any interest to that?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for coming.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for coming, Senator. I have two questions. The first is, there is a bill on campaign finance and limits to contributions. If you would just tell me where you think that'll end up.
Sure.
At $10,000. And the other is kind of actually going to a polling place and voting. Leon County has a very simple system where it's a ballot, you bubble in, you don't connect lines like Palm Beach County or other counties. It's scanned, and so a copy is kept, and it's recorded pretty efficiently. And is there any value to having a system, one system in every county in the state for voting?
Yeah, there is. And Senator Jack Ladvalla, who chairs our Ethics and Elections Commission, or committee rather, and who gets the credit for shepherding the ethics bill through the Senate, held a hearing, and he invited 9 different supervisors of elections to come forward and talk about what happened in the 2012 election and what the legislature ought to do. And I think one of the results of that hearing and Senator Ladvalla's leadership will be an elections bill that hopefully will create a simpler system of voting and also provide more flexibility to county supervisors of elections. Let me give you an example. A supervisor of elections from South Florida has asked for 14 days of early voting. Supervisor of elections in Holmes County, which is one of the counties that I represent, came to our legislative delegation meeting in Holmes County and in effect said, if there are 14 days of early voting, the crickets will be chirping for about 6 of those days because nobody's going to show up. So give us flexibility to do what makes sense in our own counties for those people who live here. And there are some counties that have a lot more people, some counties that have less people, some counties that have military bases where people work odd hours and therefore they need extended hours as much as extended days. So we're working now with the House of Representatives. Chairman Ladvalla is working with the House of Representatives to try to come up with something that would be a more flexible approach to voting. Now, having said that, one of the things that the lawyers are whispering in my ear is, if you have 8 days of early voting here and 12 days of early voting there and 12 hours of early voting here and 8 hours of early voting there, you may have an equal protection problem. So on the one hand, we want to provide flexibility. On the other hand, we don't want to say, well, if you live in County A, you're able to vote more days than if you live in County B or more hours. So, you know, that's not a bumper sticker issue. That's an issue that we've got to work out very carefully. Now, as far as campaign finance is concerned, yes, I think we'll have a campaign finance bill. I noticed that Speaker Weatherford was reported to have said yesterday that he's come off of his suggestion that the campaign contribution limit be moved from $500 to $10,000. I think that's a step in the right direction. I think, that, as I said, the Speaker is as committed to cleaning up this system as I am, maybe more so. I mean, he really believes in this just as I do. But I thought the $10,000 probably would be too high a number. There's a lady that I know who contributes to all my campaigns and has since 94, and she gives me about 25 bucks each time. And I don't want her contribution, which, by the way, I have to go to her house to get. But she thinks it's important, and it is. I don't want the value of that kind of a contribution to be diminished. I don't want it to be too easy for somebody to say, well, I'm going to run for the House of Representatives. I'll make 10 phone calls and get $100,000, and that's it. I think it's important to see politicians in backyards and in on doorsteps and in small gatherings of the kind that Bill Monfort does, that Loran has done, that Bev has done, that I've done, getting $25 and $50 and $100 and $500 contributions. I don't want us to just make 10 phone calls and finance a campaign. And I think the Speaker has made a very positive step toward working out that issue. It's not going to be the rock upon which we perish. We are going to pass a bill, and Will Weatherford will get the credit for it. Lucy.
Let me take you back to ethics. I think we all appreciate your efforts to do something to improve the ethics. But why is the legislature so unwilling to let the Ethics Commission initiate an investigation when they see something there? Now, the referral process you described has been used informally for years. When FDLE or a prosecutor didn't think they had a crime, they referred to Ethics Commission, so something gets done. But the business of leaving it up to some wacky opponent or gadfly to file a complaint seems to be not very productive toward getting to the bottom of ethical problems.
Well, Lucy, you're right, and that's why we institutionalized what you describe as an informal process in the past to allow others to refer matters to the Ethics Commission. I would have no objection at all to the Ethics Commission initiating investigations. We put together what we considered to be a very strong bill that would have a strong chance of getting bipartisan support and passing, and maybe the House of Representatives wants to add that provision. If so, I'll have absolutely no problem with it.
Thank you very much.
And Lucy, we miss you already.
Already.
Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you.
This gathering of the Bill Monfort Fan Club is now excused. Please join us on March 29th when House Speaker Will Weatherford will join us. Thank you.
You've been listening to a delayed broadcast of the March 8th, 2013 luncheon meeting of the Capitol Tiger Bay Club. Join us again next time for another presentation from the Capitol Tiger Bay Club on WFSU-FM.